guest.
Afternoon, Chairperson.
Good afternoon, Chairperson.
Afternoon. Advocate Kagula in.
Good afternoon, Chair. We're just trying to establish who's in the waiting room. One anonymous, just quickly make me a co-host, Chairperson, and we'll try and find out who is the Chair of the Information Regulator in a minute.
Thank you. Thank you. Good afternoon, Advocate Kakula.
Sorry, Committee Chair, I was speaking to the Chairperson of the Information Regulator. She's saying she's waiting for somebody to let her in to the meeting. She has logged on.
Okay, yes, good. I can see her.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Yes, Chair, she's in the meeting now. But okay. I'm sure maybe what your issues. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Advocate Lakula. Can you assist to unmute her?
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. How are you? How are you, Chairperson?
I'm good, thanks. And you have battled the blitz. I don't know what was happening. I couldn't say. My device was frozen, so I'm good. I'm good, thank you. Yourself?
No, thank you very much. I think we need to start. We are already late. Today we will be getting a briefing from the Information Regulator on their fourth quarter in 2020 and the first quarter of 2020-2021 review and recommendation process. Advocate Kakula, are you with the other commissioners or is it only you and the team? Can you unmute yourself?
Yes, Chair. I'm looking at the list. I see Advocate Weapons is here, and Advocate Strom is here. The executives are here, and also Mr. Cesar Snail Kamduze. They're all here, Chair. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. Over to you. Can you start with your presentation?
Yes, Chair. The presentation is going to be done by the CEO, and let me start by greeting you, Chairperson, and all the other the honourable members that are with you. I'm just going to make a few remarks for less than 5 minutes. General remarks. The first one is that you will realize that in some aspects we have not been able to achieve the targets that we have set for ourselves. Human resources capacity and inadequate budget remains our major concern in terms of just being able to do the large workload that we have. We also wish to bring to your attention just two more issues. One, that since the Act came into operation, the workload has increased so much that we're not coping, but we're doing our best under the circumstances. Secondly, just the number of data breaches that are occurring in this country, something that we also want to bring to your attention. It is quite worrying. And the last issue that I would like to bring to your attention, Chair, is that a few weeks ago we submitted to you, to Parliament, we sent a copy to the Speaker of the National Assembly and to the Chairperson of the NP and copied you as the Chair of the Portfolio Committee, a report that we compiled in terms of Section 40 of our Act. And the report that we submitted relates to the protection of personal information in the management of COVID. We have brought certain issues to your attention, and we're requesting Parliament, through the committee, of course, in your oversight responsibilities, to take those issues into consideration. Those are my general remarks. And with your kind permission, I will ask the CEO to present the APP report. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. You would be happy to note, Chair, that is the committee yesterday we have approved the appointment of the part-time commissioner. It is just waiting for a ratification by the House, which would be done in the next 2 weeks, in the next 2 weeks from the 20th of October. So that process has been done. It has been completed.
Well, thank you very much. We really appreciate that, Chairperson. That will help us a lot. Thank you very much. The CEO will then make the presentation.
Thank you very much. Over to you, CEO.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Correctional Services. And let me also greet the members of the committee and also the chairperson of the regulator and the members, including my colleagues, the executives. I would like to start, Chairperson, with the slide. The other slides are background. The slide 3, this is the introduction that we have previously given. I'll zoom straight into the fourth quarter report, which is slide 6 of the presentation. Then in summarizing the performance for that period, we had 13 performance targets, of which 7 have been achieved, and this represents 53%. Then I will go through each of those targets. At first, I've got this slide 7, which just gives a summary of the strategic objectives and the goals that were set for that financial year 2019-20, the 5 strategic goals. Then I will move to the next slide in terms of the breakdown of those performance targets. Slide 8, then starting with this slide, we have a performance indicator that relates to approved and implemented public awareness strategy and plan for COPIA. Then the target for the period was the public awareness strategy and plan implemented. This has been achieved. Then the next performance indicator is approved communication and branding strategy. Then the performance target for that quarter was communication and branding strategy developed. This target has not been achieved. There has been delays in the procurement process. As at end of March, we were able to finalize the specifications. However, we couldn't get the advertisement of the bids done during that period. Then the next target, approved stakeholder engagement strategy and plan. Then for the period under review, we were supposed to have that strategy and plan developed. This target has been achieved. Moving to the next slide, approved research strategy and plan. During that quarter, we were supposed to have the research plan approved. This was not achieved. The reason for variance is that we were able to develop this draft strategy and the plan for research, but we couldn't finalize it up to approval stage due to inadequate human resource capacity. Then the next indicator relates to approved guidelines for codes of conduct. Then the target period was approved guide for code conduct. We did finalize the guidelines and went out to consult with the stakeholders. And due to the large volume of comments that were received that we are still assessing even now, we couldn't approve these codes and publish them. Then they're also part of the current financial year's target. I'll talk to this target later when I talk to the first quarter of the current financial year. Then the next one, approved guidelines for the registration of information officers. Then during the period under review, we're supposed to have these guidelines published and approved. Then we couldn't finalize that process. The guidelines were developed, but the approval part and the publishing couldn't take place due to great human resource capacity. Then moving to the next slide, signed memorandum of cooperation implemented. This relates to the PAIA functions, which are currently being performed by the South African Human Rights Commission. So we had to enter into this memorandum of cooperation. So we are currently implementing it in the form of having the Human Rights Commission continuing the performance of the function. This has been achieved. Then the next slide relates to the handling of complaints related to the violations of the protection of personal information. The indicator there was approved for peer complaints management process, standard operating procedures and manual. The target there is testing and piloting of the complaints management process, SOPs and manual. What we have been able to do was to get these processes and SOPs approved and the manual as well in place. But the piloting phase couldn't be finalized as at 31 March due to inadequate human resource capacity. Then the next performance indicator under this strategic objective, fully established administration to enable delivery on the mandate. The first performance indicator, there is approved organizational structure. Then the target for the period under review was second phase of the organizational structure positions advertised. This was achieved. Then the next one is approved corporate services policies and guidelines. And during the period under review, we prioritized the recruitment policy to be approved. This was achieved. The next indicator is approved delegation of authority framework. So for the period under review, we're supposed to have the framework approved. And in terms of the achievement, we couldn't finalize the approval stage, but the delegation of authority was approved as of 31 March. So the reason being inadequate human resource capacity that we couldn't reach the approval stage. The next performance indicator is the approved employment equity plan and policy and plan. So in terms of the target draft EE policy table for discussion, this was achieved. Then the last one is identify the list of finance policies to be developed. Then the list of identified finance policies approved. The list was approved as of 31 March. Then coming to the budget, what we did here, Honorable Chairperson and members, we looked at the budget for the whole year so that this can give a sort of a comprehensive picture of where we are with regard to the spending. As you can see, in terms of compensation of employees, We have been able to spend about, I mean, our budget, if I may start there, Honorable Chair, the budget was adjusted during the year, and then it increased to 19,517. So, but the compensation of employees never changed. Then the adjustment happened on the goods and services, the second row. The original budget 6,578,000. Then it was increased to 8.994 million. then for buildings, that amount hasn't changed. Then for machinery and equipment, then the budget was adjusted here from 2812 million to 2774. So we had to take some money and move it to goods and services because we had a spending pressure on the goods and services. Then the total budget then increased to 31,323. So in of the spending, out of the budget of 31,323, we have been able to spend 22,435. And this represents 72% of the spending. The under expenditure of 8.888 million was recorded. Out of this amount, 7,178 million was for compensation of employees. We couldn't fill all those vacancies by 31 March. Then we filled all of them, but they were filled in a scattered manner, such that, I mean, there were months where we couldn't finalize those positions. But as at 31 March, all the 13 positions that were planned during the 1920 financial year were filled, but they were filled late. That is the reason there was underspending on personnel. Then there is also 1,711,000, sorry, for machinery and equipment that was not spent. Then the last bullet is very critical because it talks about an overspending on goods and services. So although we had an underspending on the total budget, there is an item or a line item where there was an overspending of 1,000 under goods and services. However, this overspending doesn't impact on the overall budget because we still had an underspending of 8,888,000. So we felt that it was important to make this emphasis that there's an overspending under one line item, but the overall budget wasn't overspent. So then moving to the first quarter of the 2020-2021, then in terms of the summary of the targets, we had planned 17 targets, and out of the 17 targets, we achieved 12 targets, and this represents 70% performance. Then, as you are aware, honorable members, that the manner in which our plan process now unfolded for this current electoral period, 2020-2025, then the planning had changed. Previously, we were planning in terms of strategic objectives and goals, and the change now is that the plans have to be packaged in terms of programs. So we did identify 5 programs as they are listed here. Program 1 is Protection of Personal Information Act. Program 2 is Promotion of Access to Information Act. Program 3 is Education and Communication. Program 4, Legal Policy Research and Information Technology Analysis. And the last program is Administration. Then on the right, these are the purposes of the program as required in terms of the guidelines from the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. Then moving to the first, program 1, Honorable Chair, under this program, the output is draft guidelines for codes of conduct. Then we have a number of performance indicators and targets in this area. The first performance indicator is the approved codes of conduct. And this is the target that I earlier mentioned, that as of 31 March, we were still busy going through the comments that were received, and this process has also moved to the first quarter of this financial year and the second. And also now we are in the third quarter. Due to the high volume of those comments received, we are busy considering those comments, and the plan for the first quarter in relation to this performance indicator was to continue with the comments which has been achieved. Then the next performance indicator is approved readiness plan for the implementation of POPIA. We did somewhere in June, Honorable Chair and members, present the readiness plan. Then in terms of the annual performance plan. What was planned for this quarter was to have this readiness plan drafted. We have already achieved it. We are already actually been implementing it. Then the next performance indicator is approved guidelines for the registration of information officers. Then the first quarter target was to develop the guidelines for the registration of information officers. This has been achieved. Then the next performance indicator is approved and updated PAIA guide. Then the performance indicator for the period is draft PAIA guide to incorporate POPIA. This target was not achieved. The reason being that at the time when we planned or we finalized the annual performance plan, we were not aware that at the time that the proclamation is issued in relation to POPIA, that the function might still remain with the Human Rights Commission. So as it stands, the Human Rights Commission did update the existing PAIA guide. But then as the regulator, we couldn't at this stage finalize the updated guide, but it is then in our plan that we will definitely, by end of financial year, in preparation for takeover in June 2021, the guide will have been finalized. But what has happened in the first quarter is that we didn't do much, but we are on course to really ensuring that we'll update the existing guide that is with the Human Rights Commission. Then when we take over, it will have been updated and uploaded it all onto our website. Then the next, still under program one, the next performance indicator, but under a different output. The output here is handling of complaints related to the alleged violations of the protection of personal information. The first performance indicator here is approved POPIA complaints management process, operating procedures, standard operating procedures and manual implemented. Then the target was the piloting of the complaints management system. I can confirm that we have been able to do the piloting. We selected high profile complaints and we have put them through the system and this target has been achieved. Then the next one is automated complaints management system acquired. Then the target for the quarter is the drafting of the specifications for the automated complaint management system. The specifications have been drafted. We are in a process of actually going to the stage of advertising the bid. So then the next program is Promotion of Access to Information Act. Under this program, the output is developed process for PAIA functions handover from the South African Human Rights Commission. Then under this program, the first performance indicator, we are continuing with the implementation of the Memorandum of Cooperation. Then this has been achieved as it appears also as target for that quarter. Then the next performance indicator is approved the readiness plan for the implementation of PAIA. So the target was a drafting of the readiness plan. This plan has been developed and also approved. It was also presented to the portfolio committee during the meeting of June 30. Then the next program is education and communication. Then under this program, the output is develop and implement educational awareness and stakeholder management programs aimed at promoting the protection of personal information. The first indicator there is approved and implemented public awareness strategy and plan for POPIA. Then the target there was to conduct 3 public awareness sessions. Then this target has not been achieved as we planned to hold physical sessions and unfortunately in various provinces and due to the national lockdown, this couldn't be achieved. Then the next performance indicator is approved communication and branding strategy and plan. Then the target was to develop the communication brand and branding strategy and plan. This target has not been achieved and it is actually flowing from the previous quarter, fourth quarter of that financial year. So what we've been able to do, as I earlier reported, is that the bid specifications committee was were finalized. Unfortunately, when the lockdown started on 27th of March, National Treasury placed a moratorium for not advertising bids during the lockdown. So we only had to resuscitate this process during the second quarter of the financial year. So, and we are now at the stage of actually evaluating these bids that we received. Then the next target is number of stakeholder engagements held as part of the implementation of the stakeholder engagement strategy and plan. We planned to hold 20 stakeholder engagement sessions. This target was not achieved. Again, this was planned to be a face-to-face engagement, and during the lockdown we could only manage to do 3, but now we have sort of revised our strategy now, doing some of these engagements eventually to try and ensure that at the end of the financial year the target is achieved. Then the next program is legal policy research and information technology analysis. And the output there is develop and approve research strategy and plan aimed at ensuring the protection of personal information. For this period under review, the indicator is approved and implemented research strategy and plan. So the target was to have this research plan and strategy developed. This has been achieved. Then the last program, Program 5 Administration, the output is fully established administration to enable delivery on the mandate. The indicators approved phase 2 of the organizational structure implemented. Then the target is recruitment of staff for the vacant and funded posts. This has been achieved. Then the next indicators approved prioritized corporate services policies and guidelines. And the target is the identification and development of prioritized corporate services policies and guidelines. This has been achieved. Then the next indicator is approved delegation of authority framework. Then the target is the delegation of authority framework developed. This framework has been developed. Then the last part of the target is the continuation of Program 5. Honorable members, then the first indicator there is approved prioritized finance policies and guidelines. During the period under review, we were supposed to develop prioritized finance policies and guidelines. This target was not achieved as the reason for variance did identify 4 finance policies. However, at the end of that period, we could not finalize the development of these policies. Drafts were there, but still at the levels, particular level of development. So this is mainly due to inadequate human resource capital that we couldn't finalize all these policies up to stage of approval. The last indicator is the separation plan for human resources finalized and implemented. Perhaps this might require me to just elaborate a bit. So this plan is mainly designed to ensure that the regulator fully operates as an independent institution, as we currently rely on the policies and systems of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. So for the first quarter, our plan was to ensure that this plan is developed and also approved, so that has been achieved. The plan is there. We are at the stage of looking at the deliverables and implementing them. In terms of the expenditure for the period under review, honorable members, the annual budget is 45 million. Then in terms of the period under review, we planned to spend 11,375. Only managed to spend 5.173 million. The variance is 6.2 million. Then the explanation for this expenditure is that the underspending on the compensation of employees was due to the filling of the funded positions that were advertised during the last quarter of the previous financial year. This is the phase two that I was thinking about. So we advertised positions during January and March, but then when we were busy with the process of shortlisting and others, unfortunately, then the lockdown started. But when we reopened, or when the lockdown was eased from June, we started fast-tracking some of the processes, and even now we're still busy with some of them. Then, hence, we couldn't spend all the money that was set aside for that period. Then also, the issue of underspending on goods and services is directly linked to the lockdown, because we couldn't, for the 2 months of this period, we couldn't do anything in April and May. Then we couldn't really, procure. Then hence the spending there is very low. And also the issue of machinery and equipment was affected, because we had to procure through the normal procurement processes. Then there's also a slide. Yeah, the last slide is the conclusion, honorable members. In terms of conclusion, we would like to bring three important aspects to the attention of the committee, that the regulator is still underfunded, and this underfunding will not only affect its reputation, but also result in it being unable to implement its mandate. Then the second point relates to the fact that the regulator has a dual mandate, the protection of personal information and the promotion of access to information. And under normal circumstances, when new institutions are established, you will find that the function will have existed maybe in a government department, and it is then transferred to this new institution in terms of Section 197 of the Labor Relations Act, where the resources will be transferred. So unfortunately for the info regulator, that doesn't happen, because the POPIA function is completely new. Then we start from scratch in terms of the budget that we are getting from Treasury. And also the POPIA function, although it is still with the Human Rights Commission, when it comes to us in June, it is not coming with any resources, because they have a budget of less than a million that actually is even going down. So that really places pressure, too much pressure on the regulator in terms of achieving its planned target, because we work within what we are having, and we didn't inherit any money from another institution. Then the last bullet, the regulator appreciates the financial constraints that are faced by the country. Hence, we have identified areas where we can actually share facilities. For instance, we are sharing accommodation with the Human Rights Commission, which is, a way of minimizing the cost in our administration. This concludes my presentation, Honorable Chairperson and members. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Over to you, Chairperson.
Thank you for showing. That's the sum total of our presentation, Chairperson. We will take questions.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I will now note hands from the honorable members. Can you remove the slide so that I can be able to see the hands? Honorable Sir.
I have questions, Mr. Chair.
Honorable Petimba. Oh, okay. Yes, now I can see the members. It's Honorable Swart, Honorable Petimbach, Honorable Horn, Honorable Mola, Honorable Newwood Drachens, Honorable Yako, Honorable Mufuke, in that order. Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you to the regulator. Really appreciate to the chairman of the regulator and team for the report. I would like to just raise a few aspects, and that is the concerns that the information regulator raised previously about the COVID-19 issues, and particularly the designated judge, the concerns about not having effective powers during the to protect privacy during this time, whether there has been further discussions in this regard, and whether the chairperson and information regulator is still concerned about issues relating to COVID-19 and privacy-related issues in that regard, balancing that with the need to, and of course the apps that have also been about tracking and tracing. I'd just like some further comments in that regard. And then, as we know, Chair, certain of the sections have now been implemented, and but one of the concerns is section 114.4, which only commences next year. That's the transfer of the functions to the of PIA from the Human Rights Commission to the Information Regulator, and we got an update to a certain degree about a signed memorandum of understanding, but obviously that is a substantive issue, and I'd like the chairperson just to comment on further progress in that regard, the mechanisms that must be put in place to ensure that the function is transferred, and of course, bearing in mind the constraints, the financial constraints, the human resource constraints that the information regulator is facing, taking over this task. In particular, with the briefing we've just received about the sharing of accommodation with the Human Rights Commission, would there not be resources? And Chair, we might need to look at that. Understanding the Human Rights Commission is also under financial constraints, but given that the PIA function is being taken away from it, would there not be a saving on their side that one could look to transfer funds from the Human Rights Commission to the information regulator, given that a substantive part of their work will be now taken over? Has this been part of discussions at all, and is it something that we should be looking at from the committee's perspective? And Chair, again, the issue of finances has been raised, the shortfalls going forward, the limited budgets that have been given, understanding the financial constraints of the nation. These are, again, some of the issues we would need to address. And then, Chairperson, sadly, already you will be looking next year towards the ending of your term and those of your colleagues, and one needs to start looking at a transitional phase. It is a bit early already, but that's time, and we see how long it took for us to fill or for the process to unfold of filling the part-time commissioner, and maybe we need to have a discussion about that as well. But I just want to thank you for the presentation and thank you for your hard work under very difficult environment. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Swart, Honourable Horn.
Thank you, Chairperson. I firstly want to request an update. During previous briefings to the committee, we were informed that the Deputy Minister of Justice would facilitate a discussion with the Deputy Minister of Finance around the, let's say, all the financial issues, financial independence, the budgetary issue, et cetera, of the information regulator. Could we be informed as to whether that meeting has, in fact, taken place and whether progress has been made in that regard? Then talking finances, Chair, and we know there's been granted extensions due to the lockdown for the filing of annual reports and consolidated financial statements and audited financial statements to Parliament. But nonetheless, it would be good to hear at what stage the information regulator is now with finalizing their annual report. And possibly they could also just appraise us as to whether they would be undergoing an independent or a separate an audit separate from the Department of Justice, given that their budget currently is a ring-fenced budget within the Department of Justice. Then in terms of the readiness plans, it is so that on the one hand, there has been a perpetual delay in the operationalization of the information regulator, and now we know that when we met with them prior to the COVID-19 related lockdown, it finally seemed that there would be some impetus in operationalization of the information regulator, and it's only natural that it had a dampening effect, the whole lockdown on this. So I would like to ask to what extent they have been looking at redrafting their own phasing in readiness plan. We take note of the briefing in respect of the filling of vacancies, etc., but the big worry at this stage is, let's say, the internal processes that has to happen before middle of next in order to properly fulfill the functions that will then properly take shape. And then while speaking of that readiness around POPIA, can we be informed as to whether the information regulator is playing a role in let's say monitoring to what extent those who will be subjected to those provisions of POPIA, which for all practical purposes really takes effect middle of next year, to monitor whether these institutions and businesses are progressing with doing what is necessary in order for them to be able to comply by middle of next year. If one looks at social media and let's say reports out there, one sees a lot of seminars at this stage being presented by private firms of attorneys and et cetera, and one can just think that this is a fresh source of income for certain people who then claim to be able to assisting others to be ready for the middle of next year. And in that, there's also a danger of exploitation in itself. So the question really is, to what extent is the information regulator, those institutions, to the best of my knowledge, no requirement that they file whatever content they are to deliver at these seminars and briefings. The question is institutions and entities on their own, or is the information regulator involved in also capacitating them for the middle of next year? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Breitenbach.
Thank you. I thought you forgot about me. I would like to... I've been covered largely by Honourable Swart and Honourable Horn. I have just one further question. I'd like to know a little bit more about the Experian leak, what the current position is, and how it happened that the data landed up on a Swiss site being sold to All and Sundry when Experian had given the assurance that the leak had been contained. I'd just like more information about that. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Nola.
Thank you very much, Chair. As well, welcoming the presentation from the information regulator. Chair, starting from the first, the 2019-2020 fourth quarter report, in a various number of performance indicators, a lot of targets were not achieved. And the basic and the general reasoning to such is inadequate human resource, which has led to that, which has in effect made the budget it has in effect took us to an understanding of the budget. But in the presentation, the CEO makes mention of them having failed all those 31 points. But when you fast forward in the report on the 2020-2021 first quarter, we still have an underspending on the compensation of employees. If they can just make it simple for me and maybe present a short brief of the vacancy rate in the regulator as things stand now, so that we're able to follow the events of the report. The second issue, Chair, relates to the issue of the stakeholder engagement, which out of 20 they've done 3. And that had a negative impact on their own budgeting. The reasoning they put forward, Chair, for having done 3 out of 20 is the fact that there was lockdown declared by the President. But during the entire lockdown since March, Chair, meetings and engagements were done by stakeholders through digital forms. Why is it that they did not employ the same means to do the engagements with the stakeholders as their performance indicator? Because the entire country and the entire world was operating through digital means to ensure that work is being done, although the entire world is locked down. What are the actual reasons why they did not employ the same strategies that was employed out there right through and everywhere across all boards? So that's my second question, Chair. The last of which, Chair, would be a bit more general. We've had recently a very tragic moment where TransUnion had a mismatch of personal information of South African people that took a serious curve in terms of the risk of the exposure of personal information of our citizenry. I want to check with them, what then becomes the role of the regulator when such cases do take place in society, and in particular when the private sector itself is the one that is responsible and reckless about the personal information of our citizens? Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Yang.
Chair, it was Honorable Wilma.
Can we please follow the chair's list?
I'm starting to feel some sort of way about Honorable Wilma because she's always coming at me every time I speak. Thank you, Chair. It's nice to meet you. I'm sorry I didn't show my video, but my network was a bit dodgy. For me, basically, it's just a matter of the vacancies that they have still outstanding. I think I have an issue, and I would like for them to expedite that part of their KPIs, at least to expedite the jobs that they need to fill. We all understand how COVID has impacted us as a country, and I know that whoever has been trying to apply is probably really seeking that opportunity to work for the organization. So I think if they would just try and expedite the issue of the jobs that need to be filled, that for me would make me very happy, and that's the only submission I have to make for this presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Honorable Nevoet Drachens.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And apologies, I don't pick on anybody. So I did follow the list. Anyway, thank you, Chair. And thank you to the independent regulator for your presentation today. And good afternoon to everybody present. I would like to add to Honorable Mola's question, about the targets that have not been met, and the reason that is put in the report is inadequate human resource capacity. So I would like the CEO to elaborate on that, on what exactly he means by inadequate human resources, because that was in quarter four, before the COVID-19 lockdown. So if you could elaborate on that. And then secondly, is there any COVID-related expenditure done by the information regulator, and what was the what was that expenditure? And thirdly, South Africans have the right to information, but during the COVID-19 lockdown, there was a lot of fake news being distributed on on social media and news channels, and it led to a lot of confusion and paranoia in some cases. So what does the information regulator's role, what is their role in combating or reducing the spread of fake news? And then in terms of cybersecurity, we need it more than ever before. So I would also like to find out, does the information regulator have any role to play in terms of cybersecurity? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mofuke.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation of Advocate Lagula and the team. Chair, I've been covered by a number of colleagues on the target, and also by a member Salt on the issue of the office space. And I think it's partly that, an Honorable Mola. I just want to check on the issue of the, is the regulator planning around the digital economy and fourth industry? If not, what is the regulator doing to ensure that they actively contribute to the process? And the last one is adding on what Honorable Breitenbach was asking about experience. What lessons have you learned in that? And actually, that process made you to look deeper into all the credit bureaus in the country. And if you can tell us, how many are they that we know of the three big ones, but the small ones that are also playing a role, are they not a danger to the society? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Over to you, Chairperson, and your team.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the members for the questions. Some of the questions will be answered by the CEO and some of them by the members, and I will indicate as we go which of the sections will be answered by which colleagues. Regarding the COVID-19 issues and the designated judge, after our interaction with the committee, we convened a meeting with the designated judge.
No, Honorable Breitenbach is dissolving this meeting. She unmuted the mic, and there's a dog barking at her back.
Noted, Honorable Mola. Members, can you mute your mics when you're not speaking?
My mic is muted. I don't know why you can hear him.
We could hear the dog. Can we all mute our mics when we are not when we're not speaking? Can you proceed, Chair?
Yes, Chairperson. Thank you very much. So we held a meeting with Justice O'Regan to discuss her mandate and her role, and how we can work together on the work that she is doing. She did indicate that she had a very, very narrow mandate, which related to the protection of personal information of people affected by COVID through tracing and tracking and tracing through mobile phone devices. So her mandate is very narrow, and she was of the view that if that method of tracing and tracking was not going to be used by the government, then she doesn't think that her role will continue. The question that was asked was whether we are still concerned about the COVID-19 issues and privacy. Yes, we are. The Section 40 report that we submitted to Parliament, and Chairperson, I would like to just ask for your indulgence just to find out whether that report reached you, because in that report we raised quite sharply what are the concerns of privacy and protection of personal information, particularly when COVID-19, when the national state of disaster comes to an end, because the National Department of Health is holding a lot of personal information of people who were affected by COVID together with their contacts. At the end of the national state of disaster, that information has to be deleted, or it has to be de-identified to the extent that it cannot be reconstructed. Those are the, that's what POPIA provides. But POPIA also provides that during the national state of disaster, there has to be correction of personal information, because some people in the national, in the database, maybe are indicated as having tested positive and maybe they are negative. And also what security measures have been put in place to ensure that that personal information is actually not hacked or not compromised. These are some of the issues that we have put on the table that we will monitor, but we are also requesting the portfolio committee to be vigilant as well, that when honorable members conduct their oversight role, they should actually also look at those issues. So yes, the question is that, the answer is that we are still concerned. We wrote to the DG of Health and we're following up because we want to be proactive so that he can tell us what measures do they have in place to ensure that at the end of the national state of disaster, and even during the national state of disaster, personal information of South Africans is not compromised. So that's as far as Mr. Honorable Swart's question is concerned. And regarding 114 and transfer of PAIA functions, I will just make one point and then I will then hand over to Advocate Strom to respond to the issues relating to PAIA. But what we have done on our side, you see, PAIA, the amended PAIA, unlike POPIA, it gives the power to make regulations to the Minister of Justice. He's the one who has the power to make regulations. Whereas POPIA gives the regulator power to make regulations. So what we have done, we have looked at and compiled a list of all the regulations and the rules and so on that have to be made by the Department of Justice, by the Minister of Justice. We are in the process. We operate or we start from an assumption that says the Department of Justice knows the regulations that they have to make in preparation for the coming into effect of 1144. But we don't want to sit back and assume that they will make those regulations. We also want to be proactive. That is why we have analyzed PAIA as amended to say what regulations are going to be needed, which ones have to be amended, and also how do we then make those, ensure that the minister makes regulations in a way that there won't be any contradiction between PAIA and POPIA. I'll give you an example. The complaints handling process. Under PAIA, POPIA, we are the ones who have to develop regulations for handling of complaints, which we have done. Under POPIA, it is the minister who has to do that. So we have to ensure that when the minister develops those PAIA regulations for complaints handling, they are consistent, or there is no contradiction between POPIA and PAIA. So these are some of the things that we are doing to prepare for the transfer of PAIA from the South African Human Rights Commission to the regulator. But for the rest, with your kind permission, also regarding the budget and whether the mandate is funded and so forth, can I ask Advocate Strom to just add to what I have just said. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you,
Thank you very much, Chair. Good afternoon, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and honorable members. Thank you very much, Chairperson Advocate Kabula. With regards to Honorable Swart's question on in terms of 1144 of Popea, yes, indeed, the PAIA function will come to the regulator come 1st of June 2021. What we have done since the proclamation by the President is that we have our quarterly meetings. We are continuing with our quarterly meetings to the South African Human Rights Commission. And our previous meeting resolved that we have to come with a plan of action, and we need to roll out the plan of action as soon as possible so that we'll be able to when the 1st of June 2021 comes, we will be able to take that PAIA function from the Human Rights Commission. And we are also implementing other issues that are in our MOC to ensure that come 2021 June, the smooth transition of the PAIA function to the from the Human Rights Commission to the information regulator. So yes, we will have a plan of action, and then we'll indeed roll out the plan of action in the meantime so that we are ready when we take over the function in June next year. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Advocate Strom. But to say the mandate comes to us unfunded, Honorable Schwartz, the CEO did indicate during his presentation that the sum total of the budget that the South African Human Rights Commission has for the implementation of PAIA is 1 million rand. So by the time the function comes to us, it will be an unfunded mandate. They don't have any money for PAIA, even now, except the 1 million rand the CEO talked about. Regarding the transitional phase for filling in of vacancies at the end of our term next year, I think this is a matter that the committee has to discuss. I don't think we have anything to say about that. I will deal with Honorable Horn's question regarding whether the meeting with the Deputy Minister took place or not on issues of the budget. Unfortunately, it did not take place, but on our side, what we did, we have written to the Minister of Finance, and we have been following, and we have also had a meeting with Treasury. And there seem to be, we don't want to raise our hopes, but there were discussions. Treasury actually came to us on day before yesterday to seek certain information. They wanted clarification about the presentation that we had made to them regarding our funding. We are crossing our fingers. We hoping that something positive will come out of the questions that they asked us, and we remain hopeful. I will ask the CEO whether she wants to say more on our interaction with Treasury, or we want to leave it at general, generally in the way that I've reported, but also to answer the question on the annual report and how far we are with that, and also the question about whether we're going to be audited separately or not. CEO.
Thanks, Chairperson of the Information Regulator, and thanks, Chairperson of the Committee and the Honourable Members. Then in terms of submission of the annual report, the extension allows us until 31 October 2022 to submit the annual report, and will still be audited under the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development for the period under review and also the current year. Then with regard to the engagement with the Treasury, I will chair and members of the regulator say perhaps for now we leave at this stage where there is hope, because Treasury came back. We engaged with the officials on the 24th of August, and now they came back. So we hope this is really promising, because the Minister of Finance hasn't tabled the medium-term budget policy statement. So to us, the promise that by the time that statement is tabled in Parliament, then they will have taken into account our request. So then at this stage I will leave this at that point. Then perhaps I should also talk to those areas where honorable members asked for clarity with regard to the filling of vacancies. Then there was an issue regarding the inadequate human resource capacity cited as a result for underspending. Then you will have noticed, honorable members, that when we presented the annual report for 2018-19 in October last year, we did indicate that for 2019-20, there were 13 vacancies that were identified as phase one of the organizational structure. That was the executives, the CEO, and some personal assistants. So the process of filling those positions moved slowly. So leaving the chairperson and the members being the main people who were doing most of this work that was in the APP at the time. For instance, I joined as the CEO in June, then the other executives, I think it's three of them or four, around four, they joined between July and March. So the majority of the work was done by the members and they couldn't do that work without, I mean, support staff. Then hence, I mean, you'll see a situation where some targets have not been fully achieved, but the drafts were in place. Then there is also an issue of now vacancies during the 2020-2021 financial year, where two honorable members raised and questions there. The first question was, it is unclear as to whether the positions that we are talking about are filled or not. Then, and also another member, I think it's member Yako then requested also that we give a breakdown. In giving a breakdown with regard to these positions, I can confirm that for phase one, we had 13 positions that were filled by 31 or at 31 March. These positions were filled. Then phase two contained 18 positions. As at 30 June 2020, we only filled about three positions at that time, whereby people already were given offers and even, it's four, because, I mean, during the lockdown, before lockdown, we managed to fill three. When we opened from 1 June, we started opening, then the fourth employee joined. But as I can confirm now, out of the 18 positions, 12 have been filled, and we are left with only 13 positions. Then we are left with five. The reason the five positions remain unfilled is that we did go through the list of the applications received, and we find that we couldn't really have, I mean, a pool of candidates who meet the requirements that were set. Then we had to re-advertise those positions. If I can then name those positions, the first one is the Executive for Education and Communication. The second one is the Senior Manager for Legal Services and Litigation. Then we have a Senior Manager for Complaints and Investigations, responsible for POPIA. Then we have one Senior Manager responsible for Compliance and Monitoring for PAIA. Then we had a Public Awareness Manager, Public Awareness and Education Manager, and also a Communications Manager. So that completes that list. Then the last, yes, but these are the positions that currently we are dealing with. Then the last issue, I think I've addressed all the questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't know how to put this in a diplomatic manner. The quality of applicants that we received was really not what we were looking for. And for the position of Executive Education and Communication, we advertised twice. And on both occasions, we couldn't get what we're looking for, to the extent that we have now taken a decision to go on a headhunting process through a recruitment agency. Because and also, you know, it goes also for the litigation officers and things, because COPIA is highly specialized, and we accept the fact that there aren't any people who are experts in COPIA because it's new, but we are looking for potential. And also we have to bear in mind that there's going to be litigation, especially from private sectors. They will challenge us. They will challenge our decisions in court. And we have to make sure that the people that we employ are up to date, they're up to scratch to defend the cases. You'd know that the government is now very strict because of lack of funds. We have to employ people who will do the money, who will do the work. We can't afford to have people who are lawyers but who will simply be post boxes to pass the briefs to lawyers in practice. We have taken a decision that whoever we employ who is a practitioner must be able to take his or her gown and go to court to defend the cases that are brought against the regulator, at least the majority of the cases. So that creates a challenge on its own. Let me also talk about the readiness plan. That's one of the questions asked by Mr. Huan, whether we are readjusting and redrafting our readiness plan internally to ensure that when 1st July comes, we are all ready. What is interesting, members, is that in our readiness plan, we had identified some of the documents that we have to draft to assist public and private bodies to comply. We have been holding a large number of webinars on compliance, particularly with private bodies. What is now happening is that what we had, some of the issues that we had put aside, that we had put on our readiness plan, we find that we have to reprioritize to accommodate some of the issues that are brought to our attention by public bodies. So the question is, yes, we are adjusting that readiness plan, and in doing so, we're trying also to prioritize a few things that we can do, because there are a large number of guidance notes, guidelines, just to guide private and public bodies. They come to us to say, how do we apply, for instance, for an exemption in terms of exemption from compliance? We have to come up with a guidance note. There is something called prior authorization in Section 57. They come to us and say, what about prior authorization? Can you give us guidance on that? They come to us, what about direct marketing? So those engagements have actually led to us adjusting our plans and prioritizing issues that the private and public bodies have brought to our attention. Regarding compliance, monitoring, and so on, the question whether we are playing any role in monitoring private and public bodies, how are we assisting them to comply? Because there are lots of firms of attorneys out there and others who are also assisting private and public bodies. What role are we playing in this regard? Mr. Snail, can you answer that question, please?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Members, Honourable Chairperson. We've actually adopted a strategy of doing what we call online webinars or online engagements. I noticed the criticism that we got pertaining to these three stakeholder engagements during the hard lockdown. Once the report for the further period will be due, you will notice that literally on a weekly basis, the regulator is engaging with several government departments, several private bodies. We have really embraced technology, and we are now literally doing stakeholder engagements, education sessions, awareness session on the online platform. So I think the regulator has not been loath. We've not just been sitting aside and waiting for the lockdown to end. We've embraced technology and we've really been going out of our way to proactively educate the public as well as the private sector on the issues of compliance, and that is our priority. When we get to the issue of data breaches, you will hear that even there we have not been loath, but I will wait for Chairperson's instructions to instruct who should present on that. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Member.
Thank you, Chair. What is also, Chairperson, giving us comfort is that the public sector government departments are also beginning to come to us to ask for guidance on how they deal with processing of personal information within their own departments. And some of us, in fact, all of us, sometimes we 2, 3, 4 webinars per day, trying to deal with the issues. And I can assure you that the private sector in particular, they're taking compliance very, very seriously. And they come to us almost on a daily basis to say, I want advice on this matter. So in answering Mr. Hong's question, yes, we are conducting those webinars and we are assisting with compliance. And we are in fact telling them that the period to put their compliance processes in place is between now and the 30th of June next year. They can't wait for the 30th. They have to ensure, because by the 1st of July, everyone should be compliant. And that is when we are going to start to apply our sanctions. I think while I have the floor, I will also talk about, Mr. Snail will talk about the digital economy for IR and so on, and our role in that. We'll talk about that in detail in answering Honorable Mofokeng's question. But I would like to say that on Friday last week, we had a meeting with the Minister of Digital Technologies, Minister Stella Ndabeni and her team, which we initiated to particularly raise the issues that Honorable Mofokeng has raised, to say they are responsible for coming up with policy on the digital economy, on the fourth industrial revolution and all that. That's their function. Our function is to ensure that those policies are in line and comply with POPIA. And our meeting was very fruitful and we agreed on how we're going together to ensure that we perform ours. We are the regulator. They have to do policy. We have to ensure that their policy is compliant. So I'm glad to report that we have had that meeting, and the minister and the deputy minister, both of them attended that meeting. I now go to Experian and ask Mr. Snail to give an update on Experian, what we did and where we are at the moment. And sorry, and as you do also talk about our role in cybersecurity, our role in fake news, the questions that were asked by Honorable Nivold Drachen. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson of the Committee, and thank you, Honorable Members of the Committee. The issue pertaining to data breaches, in particular the Experian data breach, I think the committee will be pleased to know that not only did we engage Experian on a direct level in terms of trying to find out exactly what happened and why it happened, in the interest of the public, the regulator actually appointed an independent forensic consultant, Mr. Jason Jordan. He's a world-renowned forensic South African consultant, to assist the regulator to getting to the bottom of the Experian breach. There were a lot of different reports in the media as to what happened, when it happened, and this all culminated in the regulator deciding to conduct its own independent investigation. You will also be pleased to know that the regulator hasn't only focused on the Experian data breach. There's been several other public data breaches, such as the Life Healthcare one that happened in the recent times, and other data breaches, which unfortunately I'm not at liberty to share with you due to the confidentiality principle that we apply in the case of data breaches. So the regulator has really entered the fray in terms of cybersecurity. The issue of cybersecurity has always been on the center part of data protection. And if one looks at the provisions of sections 19, 20, 21, and 22, the regulator has accepted that we don't only do data protection on hard copy documents as such, but the issues of cybersecurity, cyber criminality, as this committee would have heard, we've presented several times on the Cybercrimes Bill, they do intersect, and as a result, we've had several meetings with several stakeholders, be it the SAPS, be it SEBRIC, be it the banking community, to deal with these cyber breaches. And we've also given several directives, just going back to the Experian one, if I may, we've given several directives to Experian on how they should do notification to data subjects that may have been affected by the breach in order for them to stay vigilant and in order for them to defend themselves. So I think the regulator, within its limited resources, has really, really displayed an interest in matters of cybersecurity, as well as the curbing of cybersecurity breaches. And just to answer Honorable Glenys Breytenbach's question as to how did this information end up on a server in Switzerland. I think we live in a global society. A lot of these document sharing applications or websites are actually foreign-based. And due to that factor, the perpetrator, who we obviously cannot disclose for reasons of confidentiality and the fact that there's an Anton Pillar order that has to be respected, these people will obviously not go and drop this information on servers in South Africa where it can easily be found. In 2020, if you steal the magnitude of that information, you will go and drop it on a server in Australia. You will go drop it on a server somewhere in South America or in Russia, as we've heard with the Experian one. And that is how these things happen. And that is why we need to be serious about data protection as well as cybersecurity. And the regulator really needs adequate resources and adequate human resources, not just lawyers, not just administrators, but hardcore technical people who work with cybersecurity and IT issues, so that we can deal with these issues effectively without having to look for external consultants, as we have in this particular instance. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Member.
Thank you very much, Mr. Snail, and also to say that on the Experian issue, we did write to our Swiss counterpart, the Federal Data Protection and Information Commission of Switzerland. We are following up with them, since this Experian breach involves cross-border flow of information. So we have not, Experian reports to us quite frequently, to inform us where they are with some of the issues that they had to deal with. Chair, with your kind permission, I'm going to ask Advocate Weapons to deal with TransUnion breach, but as he does so, he must also just briefly brief you about the extent of data breaches in South Africa. Advocate Weapons.
Colin, are you there?
Good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon to the Chairperson. Yes, sorry, Chair. I'd like to apologize for the functionality on my camera. Chair, I'd like to then also then greet the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. Good afternoon, Chair, and good afternoon to the members of the Portfolio Committee. Chair, with regards to the TransUnion data breach, at this moment, Chair, we are still investigating the extent of the allegation, Chair. We have taken a first step to write to TransUnion so that we could verify the allegations. But what we're also doing at the same time, Chair, is to then use different sources to confirm if the information that we receive is indeed credible and reliable. And Chair, also with regards to the data breaches, from the inception of the regulator to date, we've received in total 52 data breaches. And what is very important to note is that for the year under review, we received 29 data breaches. But since from June this year to date, we have received 25 data breaches. And there is a cause for concern, as the Chairperson of the Information Regulator has highlighted. And this problem, we still need to investigate the root cause. It might be that there's an increased interest to pre-report data breaches to the information regulator, because the Act as it stands now has been operationalized from the 1st of July. So there is a higher level of compliance that the responsible parties would want to make. The second issue is also for us to analyze these data breaches and to also see the extent on which these data breaches have occurred. Some of the data breaches have occurred overseas or outside of the Republic of South Africa, but South African personal information were compromised, and some of the data breaches occurred in South Africa, and South Africans were also victim to a compromise of their personal information. What is key to appreciate is that as we proceed to analyze, verify, and enhance our systems, we more likely provide to Parliament a detailed report about the different causes. But what we can say, there's a lot of human error or a human element involved in data breaches that we've observed over time. Either a wrong file was attached, or somebody has provided information fraudulently to a third party. So those were some of it, and it requires detailed training and corrective action from the part and the side of a responsible party. Chair, I'm going to stop there, and I'm just going to then tell the committee chair that we are busy preparing ourselves, Chair, for our new system, which will then also look at accommodating the analysis of data breaches in future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Also to say to honourable members that the stakeholders, you would recall that I think the working on digital platforms only really took off towards the end of the first quarter. It's only in May, June that, you know, many of us started working on digital platforms. And I must also indicate that some of the engagements that we had scheduled were cancelled. For instance, we had targeted the Premier's offices in a number of provinces so that we can meet with what they call the Premier's Coordinating Committee. I don't know what the actual name is, so that where the Premier meets with MECs and mayors and so on, so that we can then, you know, tell them about the Act, that it has come into effect. And so most of those meetings were cancelled, but we will be going by, and most of them, they were cancelled by the people that we had requested, not by us, let me say so. They were not cancelled by us, but by the other side. I think the CEO has not answered the question on did we incur any COVID-related expenditure. If you can answer that question, CEO. And also, if I wonder if you have dealt with the question of targets not being met, the question that was asked by Honorable Nivo Drachen, to say, can you elaborate on what you mean by inadequate human resources capacity as a reason for not meeting the target? Answer those two questions, please. And can Mr. Snail also deal with the question of what our, do we have a role in distribution of fake news, particularly as it relates to COVID? Then I think after that, we will have, oh, and then the last question, which I'm going to give to Advocate Strom, is the lessons from Experian, credit bureaus, what have we learned? Do we know how many credit bureaus are there? That will be answered by Advocate Strom. Oh, and then we deal with an Advocate Strom and Mr. Snail. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And to the chairperson of the committee and the honorable member, with regard to spending on COVID, we only spent an amount of 18,000, which relates to cleaning and disinfecting of the offices and buying some sanitizers and other PPE-related equipment that was needed. Then when it comes to the issue of the inadequate capacity, what we mean by this is that in terms of the organizational structure, if I may give an example under the Protection of Personal Information Division, we have identified number of positions that are required. However, during the period under review being 2019-2020, and as at March 2020, we only had an executive in that division, and this executive only assumed the duty on the 1st of December, meaning that the work that the executive took over was performed by the members prior to his arrival. And also he couldn't really do all the work that was needed because there's number of activities and also issues relating to complaints that were coming from time to time. Then if I can give another example with regard to, say, in the area of legal policy research and information technology analysis, where we also had a target for research strategy and plan. The work would have started, but we couldn't complete because the executive in that area joined in the second quarter of the financial year. So hence now we have put those reasons because we didn't start a financial year in 2019-20. Staff members only started joining from June 2019, being the CEO and the other executives came in throughout the second quarter. And there was no human resource capacity to perform the actual functions. And this now left members to do the work that is supposed to be done by the executive instead of the members only performing an oversight and approving those documents or considering and approving. So this is the human resource capacity that we are talking about, because if you don't have your administrative wing as an institution like ours, then you will not be able to deliver on the targets that you have set for yourself. Thank you very much.
And just to add, Honorable Chair and members, that we don't distinguish between members and executives because we just don't have enough hands. And as it is, the members, we have been there for 3.5 years, going four years. And we in the 4 years, we have come to understand POPIA very well. Not very well, we're still learning because it's new. And our executives are new. They are on a steep learning curve. So we do the work, all of us. We don't say executives must do this, members must do this. No, everybody gets their hands dirty from the chairperson downwards. I thought I should make that point. Mr. Snail, fake news, and then Advocate Strom on credit bureaus.
Chairperson, thank you, Chairperson of the committee and honorable members of the committee. I think the issue of fake news is a new legal conundrum that I think there's a fallacy that fake news is attached to aspects of access to information. I think it is the abuse of access to information, and I think it is people having access to the internet and media that creates fake news. Obviously, fake news to some extent, if one looks at the global situation, the use of personal information has been used to disseminate fake news. So as much as one may want to divorce the two and say, well, the regulator has no jurisdiction on this, there is the aspect of personal information or data, as we put it in the international framework, to say that personal information that becomes leaked does make the public susceptible to fake news, because people can then target people. We've seen the American elections. We've seen it with the Cambridge Analytica story with our counterpart, the ICE. So as much as it's not our jurisdiction per se, our parliament needs to seriously sit down and consider a law pertaining to fake news. I mean, we do have various pieces of legislation that deal with hate speech, that deal with racism, and so forth. But I think the time has come, and I think I'm speaking to the right people, the lawmakers of this country, through this committee to say, I think a bill on fake news and the criminality associated with fake news is something that this committee should sincerely consider. I'm not saying the regulator will not deal with aspects relating to data protection or access to information related to fake news, but I think the time has come for this committee to seriously consider a bill that deals with criminality of fake news and other sanctions. Thank you very much.
Now, I think we shouldn't go there. Honorable Chairperson, I think, if you allow me, I was the Special Rapporteur on Freedom of Expression and Access to Information for 12 years on the African continent. To regulate fake news is not as straightforward, because the line between what is fake and what is not fake is very thin. But this is a discussion that we will have with my colleagues, and it's a discussion that we will have on another occasion, because what may be fake in one jurisdiction might not be fake in another. We must guard against free expression be suppressed under the guise of regulating fake news. I'm just saying that once that occasion comes where there is a discussion on criminalizing fake news, I think those are the issues that we need to talk about in order to ensure that we get a proper balance and not stifle free flow of information. That's just my aside. Can we ask Advocate Strom to talk about Experian?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll address the lessons learned from the Credit Bureau. As we are aware that the Experian data breach made a lot of impact in our country. And we, as I said, we're still investigating, and the matters, I mean, there's an unturned pillar. But a lot of lessons that we learned as far as Credit Bureau are concerned. Generally, the Credit Bureau Association was one of the first associations in 2007 to approach the regulator to have a code of conduct. And again, recently we have been receiving complaints relating to data hatching and selling of data by this credit bureau. They sell consumer information, and there's a price attached to the selling of that information. So it's been a very hard lesson for us. I mean, if it's not a breach, it's the credit bureau itself selling consumer information. I think from a strategic point of view, Chairperson, if you'll agree, the NCR has approached us, the national trade regulator, because they also come into contact with this kind of conduct by these credit bureaus, that maybe at a strategic level, we need to engage the NCR as a regulator and start looking at this credit bureau industry, because, like I said, if it's not a breach, it's an abuse of consumer information, and it's very concerning, because this data, they don't just sell them at a small price. It's huge. What they're doing is business for them. So I think this is a space that we need to regulate and to focus on as the regulator. And then I think it's one of the issues that strategically we'll have to address with our sister regulators, so that we collaborate and work together to combat this kind of conduct. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes, thank you. Yes, indeed. We had a meeting with the Credit Bureau Association and the National Credit Regulator. It was a meeting between the three of us, and it was following Experian. And the Credit Bureau Association wanted us to consider whether we will exempt the credit bureau industry from, we'll grant them exemption from the conditions for processing of personal information in terms of Section 36 to 38 of POPIA. And we said, look, we're not ready to talk about that yet. What we agreed at that meeting is that we'll meet regulator to regulator, as Advocates Forum has said. We'll meet with the National Credit Regulator, and so that we together we can take a position that is not contradictory, and then we'll then take those decisions whether we will be exempting credit bureaus or not from the application of POPIA. Chairperson, we have attempted to respond to all the questions. If there are questions that we have not responded to, we will gladly do that. Thank you very much. I give you back the floor, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I think all the questions that have not been responded to, if there are any, you can also respond in writing. You can look at the questions and respond in writing. We are under serious pressure with time. We have to start another meeting in 18 minutes' time with the Office of the Public Protector. But we are extremely encouraged by the work that you have done under difficult conditions, COVID and lack of budget, financial resources. But we are convinced that you have really done your best under all those circumstances. The question we have asked, Chair, about the letter you wrote to the speaker and copied myself, I will look at it. I will revert back to you and to the committee. I will check if I have received it. Secondly, I think it would be important for all the committee entities that are reporting to us. Because when you come for quarterly reports, it is more of a historical data that is reported upon. I think it would be important to just have a column where you give us a real-time information, because most of this information is not only for our consumption, it's also for the public's consumption. Sometimes you'd find that quarter one or quarter four might show that you have not been able to meet certain targets. But in the last weeks or so, or few days, you have been able. So it will be important for us to also get the quarterly reports as regulated by the law, and also get some bit of a real data as to where you have been, where the position has changed. Please indicate that there has been a change in position, there is an improvement, or there is a deterioration. I think it will enhance the oversight function of the committee, and the information that the public receives is just an innovation that I'm generally suggesting. And then the other issue, from the interviews that we had yesterday, it's quite clear that even from the most educated people in our country, there isn't much understanding about the role of the
the issue that we were talking about just now, the people who have our information, the ones who sell our information, there isn't much...
The
credit bureaus, thank you, Honorable Mfuka, the credit bureau, there isn't much understanding and information about them. I think it's one area that we should really be focusing on as the information regulator. I would even suggest that you further engage the Department of Communication and Digital Technologies, because they have cheaper ways of communications. For instance, if you go to their studio in Pretoria, you are able to reach all the radio stations in the country sitting in Pretoria. Because I think it would be important for the regulator to really not only be known by your stakeholders in the form of departments and governments and Premier's Coordinating Council, but all South Africans, because the information that is at risk here is the information of all South Africans, ordinary South Africans. I think it's important that you should consider doing that. And I think it would be important that you should start now making preparations for the coming local government elections. There might be a lot of data breaches that might happen during that particular period. But we also undertake as the committee to ensure that they would try by all means not to have a disruption in the work of the information regulator, that we will start the issue of adverts and ensuring that by the time your term comes to an end, you would have long finished the adverts and the interviews, so that there must be a seamless transition from this commission, from this regulator to the other regulator. We will start early in the year, next year, to ensure that we start with that particular process. But no, thank you very much for all your hard work, and we are quite happy that even as commissioners, you have undertaken to ensure that the executive and other people that would be appointed find an environment where everybody knows the organization in and out. So I think they will easily be integrated into the life of the organization. Thank you very much, Chair. And thank you to honorable members.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to members as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Okay. Honorable members, you will have a comfort break of a few minutes. We will start at 4 o'clock with the public protector.
Are we still on the same connection, Chair, or is it a different one?
It's an important question, because I was late, because I assumed that...
Very good question.
To connect on the other one, so you must just clarify that.
Okay, so also in terms of the other question. Sia and Bonani, are you going to send us a new one, or we must stick to this one?
Good day, Chair. Yeah, members, they're going to join in this one, Chair. As we speak, the public protector, I'm admitting you from the waiting room.
Members don't leave the room.
Members can just switch off cameras.
And mute yourselves.